1560 WQEW in New York. And Clint Eastwood is here, as is his biographer, Richard Schickel. We were talking a little while ago, Clint, about Johnny Hartman. You were, and eloquently, to say the least. You asked for, and I'm proud to present, one of his recordings that you utilized in the Bridges of Madison County. Tell us about it.
Well, it's a beautiful song. I think you're familiar with the writer of the of this particular song. It's a beautiful song. I always liked it. I always thought Johnny Hartman's rendition of it was quite effective. It's very, very slow and lyrical, and it was what I needed for the film. So that particular rendition is was exciting for me. I think that Johnny Hartman did some really great things. That, of course, that Coltrane Hartman album is kind of a classic. But there's a lot of he had just a very fine voice, and he just put his feet on the ground, like you said, and told the story. He didn't do it with too much trickery.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the beauty of the song, and that I'm familiar with it. My father wrote the melody, and I thought you might be interested to know that it was his notion. When he sat down to compose that day, to write a melody, the basic theme of which was played almost entirely on the same note.
Mm-hmm.
I see your face before me.
I see your face before me. You are my only dream. There is your face.
That was a deliberate notion on his part, in effect, to plant his feet on the ground and tell the truth. And that melody, as deceptively simple as it is still, I think, a great work of art with a great Howard Dietz lyric.
Well, like a lot of great works of art, it's the simplicity that really makes it. And he didn't try to... it would have been a temptation to jumble it up with and make it much fancier. But the purity of it is the fact that it is very simple.
Absolutely beautiful. Johnny Hartman, I See Your Face Before Me. That's from the soundtrack of one of Clint's films, although it existed for many years not as a part of a soundtrack to one of Clint Eastwood's films, and it was Clint's musical intelligence that that got us here and put Johnny Hartman on the map, again, but in a significant way, not only at this station, but all across the country. A gesture like that, Clint, has international implication. Are you aware of that?
Well, I wasn't, you know, I'm not aware of that. I'm glad that people have respond positively towards it, but I felt that, you know, I was using it for selfish reasons, but by the same token, it was nice to not have the usual people on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of movies have the usual Tony or Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terrific. They're great. They're top of the line, but there's other great people out there too. If a person wants to reach out and listen, you can find whether it's Irene Krall or Johnny Hartman, but there's many, many performers out there who've been overlooked in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. 1560 WQEW, does Sinatra's music mean anything to you?
Oh yeah, very much, very much. I grew up, well, he was the sort of premier pop singer when I was growing up, and he's tremendous. There's never been anybody any better.
Mm-hmm. But why is that, do you think? In other words, what is there about his singing that makes that true? And I agree with you, it is.
It all goes back to that thing you were mentioning about the feet on the floor and the truth. He always gave you that feeling that he was singing directly to every woman in the audience when he was presenting a song. And he had great musicianship with it, usually surrounded by great musicians. Even in his early days, he had the advantage of growing up being a band singer, which and working with Dorsey and Harry James Orchestra and some tremendous bands. So he got a background in singing that was he couldn't get today. There's no way he could get that. Plus the fact that performers, whether instrumentalists or singers in that particular era, sung every night. They played every night. You didn't do a thing of, well, every 2 or 3 months you might sit down and do a gig or something, and then maybe you make a record. They played every night, so they became grooved, and they were great, and they didn't have to piece their performances together with one note here and there. They could get up and do it, the mm-hmm. band and the singer together.
Just to add in, I mean, one of the characteristics of Clint's career as an actor and a director is that he is one of the most prolific people currently in the movies. He's slowed a tad in the last few years, but you know, this is a guy who made movies in the way Raoul and John Ford and all those guys did, 2-3 a year if necessary, you know, because I think for this very reason, to keep in the groove. And Clint has a story that he likes to tell, and that I also has a characteristic Clint story.
Well, let me hear
it. It's about the... I believe he was a famous trumpeter with the Los Angeles Philharmonic and these guys.
Oh, well, at that particular time in history, it was the most famous classical trumpeter in the world, is Rafael Mendez, and he was a fabulous trumpet player, and they found him playing at the Los Angeles.
He was a Hollywood Stars.
Hollywood Stars, a baseball game. They found him out there in the baseball with a
Gilmore Field.
Well, yeah, yeah. At Gilmore Field with a oompa type baseball band, and here this guy couldn't believe it. So he's saying, "What are you, the greatest classical trumpet player in the world, doing playing this baseball band?" He says, "You must play every day." And Dizzy Gillespie told me that too. He says, if you don't play every day, if you don't keep, he put it differently. He put it, if you don't have metal on the lip every day, he says, bad things happen. And that was, it's like you've got to keep your chops going. And I suppose if a person takes a certain amount of time off, it's like a bicycle, you can get back on and ride it, but you just don't ride it quite as well. Ben Hogan used to say, that if he missed a day's practice, it took him 30 days to get back to where he was. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the intricacy, people. When you're working at that league, musically or whatever, when you're working at that league, to stay on top of it is difficult.
Clint, would you tell me what you think of your performance in the Line of Fire? Are you pleased with it?
Well, it was the best I could do, yeah. I'm pleased with it. Maybe someone else might have done it.
I just bring it up because it was so wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
It was so wonderful and so honest.
It was very enjoyable to do. Hopefully it had that feet on the ground.
Yeah, of course. That's what brought it to my mind.
You're referring to, and because it is such a great statement. But you always, if you always do your best, then that's the most anyone can ask from you. It may not be satisfactory, depending on who's interpreting it, or it may not always fit in the groove with the elements of story, production. There's so many things that can go right, and so many things that can go wrong in the making of a movie. It's amazing that any of them are any good, to tell you the truth.
I tell you, you're the Tony Bennett of cinema. You just get better and better.
That's a compliment. Tony is.
Have you ever met Ella?
Yes, I have met Ella, and I had the great fortune of presenting to her, a lifetime achievement thing out in California some years ago, and the first time I met her, I was kind of overwhelmed because she was the Ella Fitzgerald, and so somebody said, "This is Ella Fitzgerald, Clint." And then the first thing she said to me, she says, "Would you give me an autographed picture of yourself?" That was her first comment, and I was absolutely thrilled. I couldn't believe it. It was like, well, I was gonna. It was like, what do I say now? Because she preempted me. I couldn't ask her for that. Same thing, or I could, and I did, but it wasn't my idea now.
I'm Jonathan Schwartz with Richard Schickel, Clint's biographer, and Clint Eastwood, who is playing the part today of Clint Eastwood. We'll be back here at 1560 WQEW in New York.